Welcome to Aging in Place, a podcast about the challenges of home and community-based living for seniors and people living with disabilities, and discussing the tools and solutions available to residents of the state of Washington. I'm Tobias Panchin.
I'm Julie Cope.
Hi, my name is Lee Schuler. I'm growing older and caring for my parents, mother and father-in-law. I have started looking into what services and supports are currently out there to provide them to remain in their homes and communities. In this podcast series, we're going to discuss what types of long-term services and supports that are currently available and some that might need to become available to folks so that they are a bit more informed on what their options and opportunities are.
Today, our topic is regarding what the current services look like and how they're designed to support the growing aged and disabled population. As we discussed in the last podcast, it is projected that 1 in 5 U.S. residents are going to be 65 or older by the year 2030, and that 70% of aged individuals are going to need some kind of long-term service and support. For these folks to remain in their homes and communities, we're going to outline some of the key stakeholder services and supports that are available to folks. Since the majority of aging adults report that their preference is to live in their homes and receive long-term services and supports in their communities, current federal policies don't really allow for this preference universally. Though Medicaid was enacted in 1965 and provided funding for adults to receive long-term care in nursing facilities, it initially gave individual states only an option to cover home health services. And as nursing facility care is costly, Congress made home health services a mandatory benefit in the 70s. And the range of services and supports available under home health is time limited. And for those who require things like personal care support on an ongoing basis, home health is unable to accommodate that need. So the federal rules, these actions have created, in a sense, a national bias towards providing long-term services and supports in an institutional setting, primarily nursing homes across the nation.
Over the years, there have been many different amendments to federal law and policy to increase coverage and access to home and community-based services. This effort, sometimes referred to as rebalancing, has resulted in a significant shift in Medicaid spending. In 2018, over 56% of total Medicaid spending on long-term services and supports went to home and community-based services. And this is an increase from only about 10% in 1988. Yet, because states are not required to cover home and community-based services, there are significant inequities to accessing these services based on where a person lives, as well as their age, their race, and what type of disabilities they might have.
What you're describing really is that Medicaid is the primary payer source for long-term services and supports. And long-term services and supports provide assistance with activities of daily living, such as medication management, bathing, dressing, moving from place to place, and personal hygiene. And the Centers of Medicare and Medicaid outline the minimum federal requirements for medical coverage and the scope of long-term services and supports. And in federal law, Medicaid is required to cover long-term services and supports in nursing facilities, and that most states really have an option of providing home and community-based services, except for that provision of home health services, which we were just talking about earlier. And for those listeners who are unfamiliar with home health, the home health benefits are limited in duration and capacity. They only include very intermittent short-term nursing care, short-term skilled physical therapy or occupational therapy, and medical equipment. And it does not offer personal care. It doesn't offer home-delivered meals or other types of long-term services and supports. Also, there is a functional eligibility threshold that requires someone who's going to be using home health to be essentially homebound, meaning they can't leave. They can't leave their residence. So across the nation, and this does include Washington as well, Medicaid covers long-term services and supports pretty much in two categories of settings. We've talked a little bit about institutional care, such as nursing homes, and then home and community-based services, which are provided in home and community-based settings. Over the years, there have been some federal programs intended to kind of support states in building home and community-based services infrastructure. And in early 2000s, 2007, Congress created a federal demonstration program called Money Follows the Person. And it was really aimed at trying to assist adults with physical disabilities, those adults with severe behavioral health conditions, intellectual or developmental delays, and older adults transition out of institutional settings and into community settings. The goal of the demonstration was to enable states to develop their long-term services and supports programs and to expand capacity with home and community-based services. But we'll end up talking a bit more about this federal grant program in another podcast episode.
It's also helpful to understand types of care that is available. What is authorized under the current Medicare, Medicaid system? These are often referred to as services. Services can help with things the person is having difficulty with, including physical care, getting dressed, preparing meals, assistance with medications, help, personal hygiene, getting out of bed, tub, toilet in the house. You know, Julie hit on some of these, taking care of the house or the apartment, getting to places, doctor's appointments, shopping, staying social and connected with their community. So these are a lot of important things that LTSS needs to cover.
Finding care can seem pretty complicated as well. I mean, the system is very overwhelming. And even though there are a lot of resources out there, it's hard to kind of shift and sift through what's available to support you, perhaps as a caregiver, if you're aging, or to support your loved ones. The first step is really to kind of understand what kind of care and additional support is needed in your situation. And it's a good idea if everyone involved can sit down and talk about what's really going on in their life. Some things that folks ask themselves are, who do I reach out to? Who can I call to see what kind of local supports and services are even available? And the reality is the types of services and the programs available will be a little different in each community. In Washington State, we tend to have services based off of counties or in county regions. And who you talked with will depend on which county you live in, what kind of care or supports the individual needs. Some parts of the state look at age as a threshold and whether they have a contract or they are receiving Medicaid state funding or whether the individual is going to be paying privately for their types of services. If you're looking for more information about who to contact in your area, we have this information listed on our website, and we'll give you the link to that website at the end of this podcast.
So I think now would be a good time to talk about some of the options that are available to you. One popular option are adult family homes. These are regular neighborhood homes where staff assume the responsibility for the safety and well-being of the adults who live there. A room, meals, laundry, supervision, and varying levels of assistance with care are provided. Some provide occasional nursing care, and others offer specialized care for people with behavioral health issues, developmental disabilities, or even dementia. The adult family home can have between 2 and up to 6 or more residents and is licensed and regulated by the state.
Did you know, Tobiah, that in Washington State, we have about 4,000 of these adult family homes across the state?
I did not know that. That's incredible.
There's quite a few options. The map is changing all the time.
I'm sure that that would give people lots of options to find a home that fits them with existing residents who maybe they get along with, have common interests with, and you don't have to just be stuck with whomever you get. So some other examples include home health care. This could be something like skilled nursing care, physical, occupational, or speech therapy, and even pharmacy services in your home. Other examples include things like durable medical equipment, such as wheelchairs, oxygen tanks, assistive technology. Then there's personal care, such as assistance with bathing, dressing, eating, transferring, and toiletry. There's also caregiver training and case management, hospice care, individual, group, or center-based day supports, including senior centers and adult day centers, congregate meal sites and home-delivered meal programs, transportation options, homemaker and chore services, financial and legal services, and home repairs and modifications. I do want to note, though, that because Medicare is popularly known to cover older adults, many people believe that it will pay for nursing facility stays and other long-term care. However, Medicare severely limits both the scope and duration of long-term services and supports. For example, Medicare coverage of skilled nursing facility care is only available after hospital admissions of more than 3 days and is limited to a maximum of 100 days, though it can often be cut off much sooner. Similarly, Medicare does not pay for the full range of services and supports that Medicaid covers through home and community-based services.
So you can see that Medicare has kind of a higher threshold, right? It requires an institutionalization, specifically like what you were talking about, to buy a 3-night stay in a hospital before you can access that benefit. So it is a little misleading, perhaps, of what Medicare covers, how to access the benefit. And that's why we were talking about earlier that Medicaid is the one, is the insurer or the payer for most long-term services and supports. Some things to think about are, with long-term services and supports, a lot of times there's a reference to individuals who are considered vulnerable adults in Washington. Each state has a different definition, but in the state of Washington, we define vulnerable adult as a person who is aged 60, so they're 60 years of age or older, and has an inability to care for themselves. And that could be related to, you know, physical limitations, or maybe cognitive, like memory limitations, or someone who has been, if they're not 60 years or older, someone who's maybe been found incapacitated through a legal system, court-ordered guardianship type of situation, someone who has a diagnosis of a developmental disability. If the individual happens to be admitted into a long-term care setting, that would include nursing facilities or assisted living facilities or adult family homes, like you were talking about earlier, Tobia. These folks who are vulnerable adults, the definition also includes those who are receiving services from hospice or home care agencies and also home health services. Remember, to access home health, you have to be homebound, meaning you cannot leave your house. So that also implies that there are likely some physical limitations. And anyone who happens to be receiving Medicaid paid services from an individual provider or a caregiver or a caregiver service. And for individuals who are receiving services from a personal aide, also known as an in-home healthcare aide.
That's amazing statistics for our state, and there's a lot of RCWs that cover it. I've noticed that some of the supportive service and agencies that are available are Area on Aging, Adult Protective Service, Family Caregiver Support Program, Home and Community Services, Long-Term Care Ombudsman, Residential Care Services, Senior Information and Assistance. Tobia, can you expand on briefly on what each of these services offer?
Absolutely. So I'm going to give a brief kind of overview of what each of the ones that you mentioned offer in terms of supports, but we're also going to cover each of these in more depth in our next episode. So the first is the Area Agency on Aging. They are a central location for free information and referral services for adults 60 and over, as well as for friends or family who are helping to care for an older adult. Next, we have Adult Protective Services. You should contact Adult Protective Services if you suspect a vulnerable adult living on his or her own is being harmed or exploited. Family Caregiver Support Program provides help and resources for those who provide unpaid care to a senior adult or an adult with a disability. Home and Community Services are experts in the long-term services and supports that are available for adults in your community. Residential Care Services has a responsibility for licensing, certification, and oversight of long-term care facilities or homes in Washington State. And Senior Information and Assistance is a group that you should contact anytime you have a question or concern about getting help for an adult 60 or older, or anybody providing unpaid care for that adult.
It's kind of interesting, too, because some of these organizations and these services, like Senior Information and Assistance, is often provided in Area Agency on Aging offices. It's not uncommon to also see family caregiver support programs also offered through the Area Agency on Aging as one of their overarching services that they can provide to aging individuals. The Area Agency on Aging also can provide some information to those who are struggling with deciphering or determining what their Medicare plans should look like, managed Medicare versus Medicaid application. So it's a place that folks can go to access more complete or more thorough information before actually applying for services. And the reality is most people just don't know about the many services, programs, and resources that are available to folks to help them live at home that are maybe covered by long-term care insurance or Medicaid or Medicare. And some of these services, which are worth exploring, are adult day centers. And adult day centers are a daytime program for an individual who needs some level of care, but doesn't necessarily need care or supports provided by a nurse or a rehabilitative therapist, like a physical therapist. Services in most adult day center programs help with personal care. We talked about this a little earlier, like transferring, moving from surface to surface or using the restroom. They can support with social services. They provide activities, education, routine health monitoring, and in general, kind of therapeutic activities so folks can maintain their range of motion. They often provide a nutritious meal and snacks throughout the day and will help with coordinating transportation and first aid and can also getting emergency care if needed. Kind of a level up from adult day centers is adult day health. And adult day health is a similar program, but this is in a setting where there is actually a nurse on staff and a rehab therapist like physical therapy or occupational therapy. An adult day health center will provide skilled nursing services and therapies such as speech language therapy, as well as counseling services. And basically all the things that are available in an adult day center can be provided in an adult day health setting. There are companion services that are available for folks. And sometimes this includes routine face-to-face visits, but also phone calls are made for and made to individuals who live alone and aren't able to leave their home easily. Some companion services also help with organizing transportation or can assist an individual with their grocery shopping or obtaining household items. There's home-delivered meals, and this tends to occur from congregate meal sites where they have a home delivery service as well. And nutritious meals are delivered to individuals in their home. And it can be an option for seniors, again, either at a senior center or in other congregate meal sites in the community. Typically, you can do both, get both types of services, go there for a meal, and then also have meals delivered, all from the same place. Senior centers are facilities in a community where older individuals can meet. They share a meal, they get services. There's usually some sort of recreational activity and calendar throughout the month. And then for individuals who may need transportation supports, there are transportation services that are also available as part of the senior centers, and Area Agencies on Aging can usually help individuals kind of navigate the best way or the closest service availability to your needs.
I really like the transportation one because firsthand knowledge. Working for Mason Transit at one time, and Pierce Transit does it too, that they have dial-a-ride services where they will come to your house, pick up people, and take them to their appointments and take them to the senior center. I did that, and both of our counties, Thurston County, Pierce County, and Mason County, all do that in this state. And I'm not sure of any of the rest, but it is an amazing thing to get people of the aging generation around and to places they need to go.
Right. Transportation often makes a difference, or is the difference between having someone stay at home all day and then also getting to activities that they enjoy in the community or even to doctor appointments. Under the Medicaid benefit, transportation to medical appointments is part of the benefit. For other appointments, though, like getting to the Social Security office or going to the senior center, what you're talking about, Lee, is a really important service. I think most counties are actually required to provide some kind of dial-a-ride or dial-a-lift type of service as part of their public transportation model. It would look a little different county by county. So referencing or talking to the Area Agency on Aging, you can learn more about what that looks like or what that company's name is in the area that you live.
And there's one more program that we need to talk about before we go today. This is something that my own mother had access to when she was in Pennsylvania. But unfortunately, we found out when we moved here to Washington, it is not available yet in our home county. This is something called a Program of All-Inclusive Care for the Elderly, also known as PACE. As I said, this is not available in all parts of Washington yet. Currently, PACE is only available in population centers in Snohomish, King, and Spokane counties, but it's going to be expanding to the rest of the state in the coming years. PACE programs keep older adults as healthy as possible in the community by providing comprehensive health care and social services. It's available to anybody age 55 or older who qualifies for Medicare or Medicaid, and if you need assistance with daily activities but can still live safely in a community-based setting. And it includes services for people with Alzheimer's disease or dementia. So it's a really great expansion upon what's already available throughout Washington. So that's going to bring us to the end of this episode. In the next episode of Aging in Place, we're going to learn more about the Aging and Long-Term Support Administration, also known as ALTSA. And we're going to talk about ALTSA's roles and responsibilities in public administration. That does it for us this time. As always, you can find show notes, including citations and links to some of the things that we've talked about on our website at capstone.panchin.net. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, all.
Thank you, everybody.
Aging in Place is produced by Julie Cope, Tobiah Panchin, and Lee Schuler in conjunction with the Evergreen State College Graduate Studies Program. For additional information, citations, and show notes, please visit us on the web at capstone.panchin.net.